Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Brazilian soccer fans didn't have much to cheer about this past week, but Brazilian music fans, you have something to look forward to. Bebel Gilberto, a member of one of Brazil's most famous musical families, has a new album coming next month, and she's here with her band to give us a live preview. And we'll continue our look back at the summer of 94. The rapper Nas joins us to look back at his masterpiece, the album Illmatic, which turns 20 this year. And the battling co-hosts of the Movie Date podcast look back at the best-selling soundtrack to that summer's hit movie, Forrest Gump. But first, a few of your calls, which take us to some unexpected musical places.
Hello, this is Ian from Ann Arbor, Michigan. In the summer of 1994, I was in between high school and my first year of college, and I was picking up the threads of kind of electronic ambient music, listening to Aphex Twin. Kind of a more contemplative style than some of the that was popular at the time.
I'm Jenny from Brooklyn. So in the summer of 94, I just moved to Provincetown, Mass with my girlfriend, and we promptly broke up, which wasn't the summer that I planned. So some of the music with which I consoled myself was Elliott Smith, The Breeders, Arrested Development, Liz Phair, Angelique Kidjo, Louis Armstrong, Ella Fitzgerald, Arvo Pärt, and Brahms.
Surprised to hear Brahms at the end of Jenny's list there, but hey, if you're looking for consoling music, this bit from Brahms' German Requiem will do nicely. And I'd forgotten that Aphex Twin record came out in 94. Can't believe it's 20 years old. Thanks for the reminder, Ian. Okay, let's move on with our look back at the major musical moments of 20 years ago. Now, 1994 was the year that the movie Forrest Gump premiered, and it brought along with it a soundtrack that has over 35 songs, not even the full number from the film. I mean, this movie was full of classic tracks, and today we're talking with Kristen Meinzer and Rafer Guzman from the Takeaways Movie Date podcast. They're going to tell us about their favorite songs from the Forrest Gump soundtrack, and also maybe tell us where the score gets it wrong. Kristen, Rafer, good to see you guys again.
Hi,
you too, John.
So who can give me a quick outline of this movie, this Tom Hanks vehicle?
So this is the story of Forrest Gump, a simple man, a simple American living in Alabama. Looks like he has low expectations. He's not somebody who's especially smart. He's not somebody who has a lot going for him. He's being raised by a single mom. And yet he's able to affect change in all sorts of American history, American life. Everything from the Vietnam War to teaching Elvis Presley how to dance. Also great moments in shrimping, as we know, with Bubba Gump, and ping pong, and really just changing the course of America. But he's just like us. He's not an everyman. He's an every American.
Wow.
Yes, he is.
Kristen likes this movie.
She sure does. She sure does. It's a very Bill O'Reilly speech there from Kristen Meinzer.
Rafer, music really is a driving force in this film, isn't it?
Yes. It's directed by Robert Zemeckis, and he is a guy who loves his soundtracks. I don't know if you remember Flight, which came out not too long ago with Denzel Washington.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Also had a terrific, terrific classic rock soundtrack. You know, he knows how to pick them. I mean, like you said, it's 35 songs, and, you know, they're all gems.
So what he does is, at various points during the film, there are these musical montages that happen, and there's a big one when Forrest Gump is in Vietnam. And you've both picked a few parts of that sequence, which runs about 9 minutes and includes like seven different songs over the course of that span. Kristen, what did you like in this sequence?
What I like is it's exactly what you expect, which is kind of what the whole movie is. This isn't a movie that's full of surprises. It's a movie that's mostly full of joys, expected joys. It's kind of like watching your favorite Folgers Christmas commercial. You're not watching it because you want to be slapped around or shocked at any moment. You just want to be reassured, and life is beautiful, and it's great. Even awful things like Vietnam are punctuated by exactly what you expect. And of course, when you're landing in that chopper for the first time over the rice fields in Vietnam, the first thing you're going to hear is Fortunate Son by CCR.
Some folks are born made to wave the flag, cool their red, white, and blue. And when the band plays Hail to the Chief, they point the cannon at you. Now, it ain't me. It ain't me. I ain't no senator, so. It ain't me.
Now, they told us that Vietnam was going to be very different from the United States of America. Except for all the beer cans and the barbecue, it was.
A little bit of the movie Forrest Gump, and just within less than 2 minutes, you hear Fortunate Son by Creedence Clearwater Revival, I Can't Help Myself, Aretha Franklin's Respect. I mean, all of these classic tracks woven into this film. Kristen liked that part of the montage. Rafer, you picked All Along the Watchtower from the same sequence, but you seem not to be as sanguine about how well it works here.
I got to see a lot of the countryside. We would take these real long walks.
There must be some kind of way out of here.
And we were always looking for this guy named Charlie.
All Along the Watchtower is a good example. I just feel like if you've got a Vietnam movie and you've got soldiers walking slowly through a rice paddy with palm trees in the background, you gotta have some psychedelic rock. You know, in Apocalypse Now, it was The Doors. This is the end. In Platoon, it was Jefferson Airplane and White Rabbit. And here, it's Jimi Hendrix, you know, All Along the Watchtower. Plus, you know, it's a Dylan cover, so you've got sort of a two-for-one boomer special
but,
there.
But as Kristen was saying, you know, you don't come to this movie looking for surprises. You want the kind of comfort of having your expectations met.
I guess that's true. And I guess that's one reason why people liked this movie, although at the same time it was a very polarizing film at the time and really one of the most polarizing films still, I think. Critics were very, very split on whether this was a warm, heartwarming tale about an American or whether it was a really shallow reading of an extremely turbulent and complicated decade. And I'm with the latter camp myself.
What I remember most about this movie is the whole hullabaloo about the special effects, you know, how they got Tom Hanks to be in the shot with LBJ,
John Lennon.
Right. And then, you know, Gary Sinise's legs when he loses his legs and how realistic that looked. And I mean, so the special effects in the film, whether you like the movie or not, were certainly impressive, Rafer. You have to give it that.
They were, although I was surprised, even at the time, and I was much younger then, but I was surprised that nobody bothered to relate it to Zelig, the Woody Allen film, which had done exactly the same thing more than 10 years earlier, and which I also thought was much funnier and much cleverer. But it was the exact same scene. And I will say, if you watch the movie again, some of those special effects with him being woven into history and some of the newscasts don't look quite as smooth as you remember.
Yeah, yeah. Well, but, you know, it's kind of like those old Thomas Edison, you know, where he'd have the live singer in the auditorium behind the curtain, and then he would play his, like, Edison cylinders, and people couldn't tell the difference. Right. It was amazing.
Live versus Memorex.
So, you know, I mean, it's easy to fool us when our senses haven't caught up to the technology yet. Sounds like that's what you're saying.
True.
All right, so Kristen Meinzer and Rafer Guzman from the Takeaways Movie Date podcast are here on Soundcheck. We're talking about the summer of 94 again, and this time specifically the Forrest Gump soundtrack. Kristen, there's just so much classic rock here, and it's there for a reason, both to set the time, and it also kind of comments on some of the stuff that Forrest is doing in the film.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, we have all of these moments where the songs actually say in the lyrics what's happening on screen. And Rafer's laughing because he thinks all of this is schlock. And I do want to throw you a bone, Rafer. A lot of this is schlock. It's not supposed to be high art. The fact that the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences awarded it the Oscar for Best Picture, I know, is very divisive for a lot of people. The fact that it's being re-released in IMAX for America because we love this movie, I know you don't care about that. But I will give it to you. It's not a perfect film. It's a comfort film. And it's the kind of movie that when it's on TBS showing back-to-back three times in a row, you're just kind of happy that it's on and you're going to watch it again and again.
So, Soundcheck listeners, you just heard Kristen smack Rafer down twice, once across each cheek, and then say, I give it to you. You know, I'll grant you. It's just, you're absolutely right. Well done, Kristen. A lesson in passive aggression right here on Soundcheck.
I am Minnesotan.
Running on Empty by Jackson Browne is another part of the Forrest Gump soundtrack. This does get pretty close to the kind of Mickey Mousing, you know, where the music is just like kind of slavishly following what happens on the film.
Absolutely. And in this running scene, this is where Jenny, has broken Forrest's heart. She had a one-night stand and she runs out in the morning before he can even wake up. And he doesn't know what to do. He just starts running. He runs until he gets to one ocean. When he gets there, he turns around and runs to another ocean. And then he just keeps running and running for years. People are chasing him. And, of course, every single song you can imagine that has the word running in it is in this sequence, which I am totally fine with. And now I really associate some of those songs with this movie. The other day I was in the car and the song Running on Empty came on. And I actually did not think about Jackson Browne. I thought about Forrest Gump. And the scene's perfect. It's not just about running. It's about America again. We see all the great landscapes of America. We see even when you're running away, you're running into our great nation. And our great nation is embracing us.
Running on Empty. Kristen, you may think of Forrest Gump and not Jackson Browne when you hear that on the radio, but Jackson Brown's the one getting the checks. So. Kristen Meinzer and Rafer Guzman are with us on Soundcheck. They host the Takeaways Movie Date podcast, and as part of our Summer of 94 series, we're talking about the hit soundtrack from the big hit movie called Forrest Gump. Now, Rafer, we asked you for another song that you liked, but you didn't have any more that you liked.
It's kind of true.
Only songs that you think show how the movie and this music was an epic fail. So give me an example of that.
Well, I mean, you know, Kristen's already pointed out Running on Empty during the scene where he's running. You could also choose
and
something.
And he's running on empty, too.
And he is running on empty, that's right. You know, you could choose The Doors, Love Her Madly. You know, Don't You Love Her When She's Walking Out the Door, which plays while Jenny is walking out a door. You know, but I think one of the songs that really speaks to the way this movie oversimplifies everything to me is Sweet Home Alabama, which is played when Jenny and Forrest are back home in Alabama. And I just feel like that's a really complicated, contentious song with a really complicated backstory, a lot of really muddled and difficult messages about race and the South. And it just becomes this kind of feel-good, warm embrace, which I know Kirsten loves about this movie. But I just feel like it's such a shallow treatment of that song.
But in defense of its shallow treatment in the film, isn't that how most of us treat the song? I mean, it became a huge hit, not because people were trying to parse all the layers of meaning of it, but because it had a good hook and it had a fun sing-along chorus.
Fair enough, and I think that may also be what bugs me about the Forrest Gump movie, is that maybe what bugs me is that it is kind of an accurate representation of the way most people just kind of stumbled through the 60s, listened to the rock music and wearing their hair long, and then when it was all done, they kind of look back at it like a big scrapbook and say, gosh, wasn't that great? And that's kind of what Forrest Gump does.
So Forrest and Jenny are living at home in Alabama to the sounds of Sweet Home, Alabama.
Well, I hope Neil Young will remember a southern man don't need him around anyhow. Sweet Home, Alabama, where the skies are blue. Sweet Home, Alabama.
Sweet Home Alabama from Lynyrd Skynyrd, used in the soundtrack to the 1994 film Forrest Gump. And as we look back at the summer of 94, lots of people were not listening to the music of the summer of 94. They were listening to music from the 60s and the 70s through this Forrest Gump soundtrack. Kristen Meinzer, Rafer Guzman of the Takeaways Movie Date podcast. As usual, they are here arguing bitterly over the respective merits of the film and its soundtrack. Actually, Rafer, although you clearly dislike the film, the soundtrack, I mean, there's nothing wrong with these songs, is there?
I mean, if you're just talking about, you know, this soundtrack as a compilation, it's unstoppable. It's, you know, it's everything. I'm going to tip my hat to Jay Cowett, who's a producer at The Takeaway, and his summation of the soundtrack was that it's basically the Now is Music, this is music compilation from, you know, from like maybe 56 to about 76.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it's full of gems, you know, from Fortunate Son to California Dreamin', the Buffalo Springfield song, For What It's Worth. It's, you know, it is the soundtrack of the boomers' lives.
Right. I remember when the Jefferson Airplane song Volunteers comes into the movie, I was just like, oh my God, this soundtrack is amazing.
Yeah.
Everybody's Talking is in this soundtrack, and it's unusual simply because it's from another soundtrack.
It's the theme song to an entirely different movie. Yes.
So does this work for you, Rafer?
I think it's another way of cutesifying everything in this film, you know, to set the scene. It's when Forrest Gump is pushing Lieutenant Dan, who has lost his legs. Mm-hmm. They're crossing a New York street. A taxi cab almost runs into them, and Lieutenant Dan bangs on the hood of the car and says, "Hey, I'm walking here," which is a replication of the scene from Midnight Cowboy with Dustin Hoffman. And they're playing the song. Everybody's Talking. But it's just another simple pop culture reference that doesn't have anything to do with a movie about a male prostitute living in New York City, as Midnight Cowboy was. It just seems a little random and a little meaningless to me.
Everybody's talking at me. I don't hear words they're saying. Only the echoes of my mind. People stop and stare. I can't see their faces, only the shadows of their eyes. I'm going where the sun keeps shining through the pouring rain. Going where the weather suits my clothes.
So Harry Nilsson's song, Everybody's Talking, from Midnight Cowboy, repurposed for the Forrest Gump soundtrack. Kristen Rafer found that the use of that song, and I'll quote him here, random and meaningless.
I absolutely do not think it's random and meaningless. It's actually recreating a similar scene. It's tipping the hat to another movie that's actually from that era. And the argument that a song that's from another movie and known for that can never be used again Does that mean we can never hear the song Help anywhere else other than the movie Help? Are we never supposed to hear Mrs. Robinson again except in The Graduate?
That's in this movie too.
Exactly. And Check and Mate. Yes, Kristen Meinzer for the win.
Really? I thought that was actually a pretty good comeback from Ray.
Me
Ferber.
Too.
All right, guys. This soundtrack reached number 2 on the Billboard charts in the summer of 94. The movie, as Kristen has not so gently reminded us, did win an Oscar. So, you know, however divisive it might have been with the critics, the public spoke pretty loudly and clearly about this film. How does the soundtrack stand up 20 years later?
I think it stands up really well, and I was just thinking about this while listening to that Nilsson song. All these songs are from the last great era of real songwriting. I feel like music now, especially these days, is more about the beat and the loop, which can be very effective, mm-hmm. and sounds good and modern, but you don't hear those kind of song structures.
Are you saying they don't write them like this anymore?
I am. God help me, I am.
Goodness,
but it's
Rafer.
True. You know, look, you know,
you're
verse, chorus, bridge.
As you speak.
That's true. That's true.
In my day.
I know. You're right. But I do think that's one of the reasons why the soundtrack still sounds so good.
Kristen?
I think the soundtrack is fantastic. It's like, what's not to love about the soundtrack? It's everything that's great about the Big Chill soundtrack. It's everything that's great about the Dirty Dancing soundtrack, minus Patrick Swayze singing. So for some people, that's going to be even better than the Dirty Dancing soundtrack. It's got all the songs you want. When you are up at 3 a.m. and the Time Life ad comes on and you want to hear every great song on all 12, you know, cassettes or 8 tracks, this is what you want. I want this. I think everybody loved it in America for a reason.
Well, people wanted it. It was number 2 in August of 1994. And 20 years later, Kristen Meinzer and Rafer Guzman of the Takeaways Movie Date podcast have been here on Soundcheck helping us pick through the soundtrack to the film Forrest Gump. Kristen, Rafer, great to see you guys again.
Thanks, John.
And here's to you, Mrs. Robinson. Jesus loves you more than you will know. Whoa, whoa, whoa. God bless you, please, Mrs. Robinson. Heaven holds a place for those who pray. Hey, hey, hey. Hey, hey, hey.
Mrs. Robinson by Simon and Garfunkel. The song so nice, Hollywood used it twice. First in The Graduate, of course, and then again in Forrest Gump. Tell us what you were doing during the summer of 94 and what you were listening to. Post a comment on soundcheck.org or call us at 866-939-1612. That's 866-939-1612. We may use your voicemail on the air. Stick around. A bit later in the show, the rapper Nas will join us to revisit his classic album, Illmatic, which left a big mark on the summer of 94. But first, speaking of ill, I am just sick about an error we made on Monday. I know, terrible pun, but trust me, the word ill is important here. In our look back at the Beastie Boys' 1994 album, Ill Communication, I told you that it sold 9 million copies and was the first number one rap album on the Billboard 200 chart.
Bob Bell got the ill communication. Bob Bell got the ill communication. Bob Bell.
Ill Communication did go to number one in 1994, but it wasn't the first rap album to top the Billboard 200. That honor goes to Licensed to Ill, the Beastie Boys' debut record, released back in 86. And the album that sold 9 million copies? Yep, you guessed it, that was also the first Beastie Boys record licensed to Ill, not Ill Communication, which is still a great record.
What's the time?
It's time to get ill!
And what's the time?
It's time to get ill!
So what's the time?
It's time to get ill!
Now what's the time?
It's time to get ill!
We regret the error. It was ill, and I'm using ill like the error was bad or crazy, not when ill means good, like when your friend is wearing brand new kicks. All right, later in the show, still more ill. Nas looks back at his hip-hop masterpiece, Illmatic, part of our Summer of 94 retrospective. But first, Brazilian songstress Bebel Gilberto performs live in our studio. This is Soundcheck.
Olha a luz do luar, marca tempo no mar, tempo pra relembrar você.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Singer Bebel Gilberto is part of one of the most famous musical families in Brazil, which is really saying something if you know anything about Brazilian music. But Bebel was actually born right here in New York, and her music has embraced the sounds of both North and South America. Bebel has a new studio record coming out next month, her first in 5 years, and it'll be called Tudo, which means everything. Here is Bebel Gilberto with her band to play the title track for us, live on Soundcheck.
Madrugada inteira tão acesa quanto luzes a piscar, pra não lembrar, pra esquecer tudo. Como paradeiro o dia inteiro, travesseiro de pena, pra não lembrar, pra esquecer tudo. Tudo que nos prometeu antes de buscar virar o vento, tudo que agora nós sabemos, nosso tudo, qualquer hora. Madrugada inteira tão intensa quanto todas as luzes, pra reviver e se lembrar de tudo. A manhã inteira só me lembra de ontem à noite, eu e você, nosso momento, tudo, tudo que nós prometemos antes de virar o vento, tudo que agora podemos, nosso tudo, qualquer hora. Madrugada inteira quanto todas as luzes piscando, pra reviver e esquecer de tudo. Como paradeiro o dia inteiro, travesseiro de pena, pra não lembrar, pra esquecer tudo.
That is Bebel Gilberto, the Brazilian singer and songwriter, with her band live here in the Soundcheck studio. And that song is called Tudo, which means everything in Portuguese. And it will be the title track of Bebel Gilberto's next record, which is due out next month. We're getting a preview of it here in the Soundcheck studio today with Bebel and her band. She's singing, of course, Leo Costa playing our drum kit, Masa Shimizu playing the guitar, Eduardo Bello playing the bass, John Raji playing the keyboards. Bebel, welcome back to Soundcheck.
Thank you. How are you?
Good. So, to do everything. I mean, there's a little bit of everything on this record. You sing in Portuguese, English, even a little French.
I can't believe it. I did that. How cute. Yes, there's a little bit of everything and also many ideas, songs from so long because it's been 5 years just to, you know, although I did a DVD in the middle, it's like, you know, the first album with new songs and, you know, whole new stuff. So It's a totally mixed feelings, everything album.
So there was a DVD, what was it, like a concert DVD in
Rio,
right?
Yeah, concert DVD and also a tape DVD, but unfortunately it's not available here in U.S.
But of the records of yours that are available here, it seems like everyone has a different kind of texture to it. You know, Tanto Tempo had the electronica, and then the record called Bebel Gilberto had more of a loungy Brazilian flavor to it. What about this one?
This one, I think it's really, literally everything. How can I say? There is this tangente song, as we were talking right before we start here doing the sound check with you, which was a great idea brought by my producer, Mario Caldato. That's a song actually wrote by Luis Bonfá and Ana Maria Toledo.
But and people know the Stan Getz.
Oh, everybody knows the Stan Getz. Yeah. And also it was the first Brazilian song to be sampled by Jade Zilia. And, you know, and it was Jade Zilia.
Oh, Jay Dilla.
Yeah. I always get confused as well. And it was a big, big hit. So that's a good thing. And also, yeah, there is Tout de Bleu. There is Areia, which is the song that we're going to play very soon for you too.
Which you wrote, right?
I wrote, yes.
Yeah, so there are covers, there are originals.
Oh, yes.
Some of the songs are standards from one country or another. And you go back and forth between Brazil and the U.S. a lot.
I do.
In the many years that you've been living here in New York, I mean, you basically moved back to the area in the early 90s, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Have you seen a big change in the way New Yorkers experience Brazilian music? It's not just we're hearing more of it. We're hearing different kinds of Brazilian music now. We're hearing maracatu. We're hearing forró, you know, things that are not from Rio but are from other parts of the country.
Absolutely, Churinho. It just opened, I guess, you know. But I would say that it's really a Brazilian fever, and that's been going on since 2000, and it's just growing.
Well, I suppose you could say it goes all the way back to the 60s when Antonio Carlos Jobim recorded with Stan Getz and Frank Sinatra.
Absolutely, yeah. And I'm just here making sure everyone...
Making sure that we don't forget it. And you mentioned this song, Areia. That means sand. Is this a celebration of the beaches of Rio?
It's like actually... it is a little more into like an intimate talk about how is your relationship when you are alone at the beach and you just... as I had the idea of a song. So it's like, you know, a song that has been created if you were in the beach, and I describe a little bit the feeling of being floating in the sand and the sea and the love and the passion and everything.
I wish we had that on video, what you just did with the head whipping all around. Very expressive. Bebel Gilberto is my guest on Soundcheck. You want to do the song for us?
Sure.
The band is here with her. The song is called Areia, which means sand, and you'll find it on her forthcoming record due next month called To Do Everything. Here once again, live on Soundcheck, Bebel Gilberto.
Devagarinho, vou saber o que tem neste chão. Se pisar, vou afundar, ou vou afundar, se não me molhar. Uma onda no meu pé. buscar o que sempre busquei na areia, na areia, na areia, ah, na areia, na areia, na areia, ah, neste grão que tão brotou, nesta areia que eu tanto quis rolar, que veio um grande grão e me espetou, nesta areia que eu tanto quis deitar. Se eu pudesse brincar e deixar, ah, eu queria lembrar do que sempre busquei na areia.
Really lovely. Bebel Gilberto and her band live on Soundcheck with a song called Areia, which means sand. The album is called Tudo, means everything. It's coming out in August. Bebel is here with the band. And, you know, obviously, Bebel, lots of people know you as a singer, as a songwriter. Some of our younger listeners might know you as the bird Eva from the Rio films, Rio and Rio 2, the animated movies. Does anyone ever recognize your voice?
Yes,
from,
they did.
From the films?
From the old lady, yes, they did. And they, yeah, they wrote me, and it was very fun. Actually, I was very, very happy to be recognized, although I'm making a very different voice, because I have to be, like, you know, very bossy and crazy, and also I have to sing off-key.
And you, Bebel, are not bossy or crazy in the least, right?
Of course I am. But I don't sing off-key, hopefully. Mm-hmm. Not yet.
Okay. Well, now, you know, you grew up with music in the home. You know, your father, João Gilberto, pioneer of bossa nova. Your mom, Miúcha,
yes,
sang with the great Antonio Carlos Jobim. So were people like, you mentioned Stan Getz before, were people like Stan Getz and Tom Jobim, were these just people who came by when you were a kid and just kind of knew them growing up?
Actually, I lived with Stan Getz for a few years when my father was still living here in New York, me and my mother. So I got to know all the family, beautiful people, and, you know, Stan, Monica, Beverly, Pamela, David, all the ones that I still, Nick, remember the names.
Yeah.
We are, sometimes we're in contact. We haven't been in contact. I should try to reach out to them. But it was very spectacular because they were living in this big mansion in, you know, in the upstate New York. It was amazing. And Tom Jobim was a great, great creative person that I met in Brazil as well. Chico Buarque. And,
well, Chico Buarque is your uncle, so that's
yes.
family. You would expect that you'd know him.
But... Yes, and he's my mother's brother, too,
right.
and all that.
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, the fact that you use cover some of the songs by these people, that makes sense. How did you come to the Neil Young cover?
That was a good one. Yeah, actually, I was invited to do a tribute to him. And I always loved Harvest Moon, so I picked that song and I decided to play. And also, before the song was featured in the soundtrack of Eat, Pray, and Love, and Samba da Benção came right before the Harvest Moon. So that was also a kick in my head. I was like, I should do it. And then I finally got to do Harvest Moon. And, you know, then I record it and in a different mood, and
right.
I think it's beautiful.
It's a great song, and as with most great songs, it, you know, is still a great song, even with a very different treatment of it.
I'm glad you still say that.
Yeah.
I just hope Neil Young likes it.
Oh, you haven't?
I haven't heard from him. I think he doesn't like it. I'm very nervous about it.
Well, he'll get to hear it, I guess, when everyone else does then, which is when the album Tudo comes out next month in August. Bebel Gilberto and her band have been playing here in the Soundcheck studio, and Bebel, it's always great to see you. It's a really fine record. Looking forward to the release next month.
Thank you very much.
'Cause I'm still in love with you. I wanna see you dance again. I'm still in love with you. All this harvest moon.
Up next, one of the greatest voices of New York hip-hop, the rapper Nas, joins us to look back at his album Illmatic, part of our Summer of 94 retrospective. This is Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. As part of our look back at the summer of 1994, we recently talked about Ready to Die, the hugely influential debut album from the Notorious B.I.G. Our guest, the writer Dream Hampton, told us that there were really two artists shaping the sound of hip-hop. Most of the country was under the spell of Dr. Dre and his so-called G-Funk sound from the West Coast. But here in New York, there was a new kid in town.
On the East Coast and in the tri-state area, Illmatic was still the dominant sound, even though the rest of the country was listening to the Chronic.
Now, why did you do it? You know you got the mad fat fluid when you rhyme. It's halftime.
That's a bit of the song Halftime from the debut album Illmatic by Nas. It influenced the Notorious B.I.G., and it continues to be honored at the top of all-time best-of lists for its unflinching look at poverty, race, class, and spirituality, all seen through the lens of a 20-year-old resident of a Queens housing project. This year, the album is being celebrated with a reissue called Illmatic 20 and a documentary called Time is Illmatic, which screened at this year's Tribeca Film Festival. Nas joined me in the studio during that festival back in April. A lot of people now are asking you to look back at the 20-year-old Nas and to kind of revisit what you were doing. What were you doing?
Well, you know, I was just being welcomed into fatherhood. You know, I had a daughter, and I had an album, my first album, Illmatic, and it changed my life. Those two things changed my life drastically. So what I was doing was enjoying myself, and I was really similar to how I am now. So, I mean, I was the same old boring guy.
Well, I was going to ask, you know, whether you recognize 20 years later that 20-year-old kid, the one who wrote, you know, Life's a Bitch.
Yeah, I do. He was a guy who was just really happy to have an opportunity to put his words to music and have major distribution to put it out there. I was just really grateful.
We're talking with Nas about his now 20-year-old hip-hop classic, the album called Illmatic. Here's a little bit from that song, Life's a Bitch. When I was younger, this I used to do my thing hard. Robbing foreigners, take their wallets, their jewels, and rip their green cards. Dip to the project, flashing my quick cash, and got my first piece of ass smoking blunts with hash. Now it's all about cash in abundance. Niggas I used to run with is rich, are doing years in the hundreds. I switched my motto. Instead of saying tomorrow, that buck that bought a bottle could have struck the lot. Once I stood on the block, loose cracks, produced stacks. I cooked up and cut small pieces to get my loot back. Time is ill-matic, keep static like wool fabric. Pack a formatic to crack your whole cabbage. Life's a bitch and then you die, that's why we get high. Cause you never know when you're gonna go. Life's a bitch and then you die, that's why we puff fly. Cause you never know when you're gonna go. Life's a bitch and then you die, that's why we get high. Life's a Bitch from the 1994 album Illmatic by my guest Nas, the rapper, songwriter, and actor. On Life's a Bitch, there's the sound of what is usually called a trumpet. It's actually a cornet, isn't it?
That's right.
Played by your dad, Oludara. Yeah. Is it okay if I geek out about your dad for a moment?
Please do.
Because in the early 80s, mid-80s, you know, he was like this really kind of central player with people like Henry Threadgill and James Blood Ulmer playing the cornet.
Yeah.
And I thought that's who Oludara, your dad, that's who he is. He's this jazz cornetist. Mm-hmm. Then a number of years later, he turns up with this kind of swampy, bluesy guitar stuff.
Yeah.
It's like, that's Oludara as well.
Right.
And then after that, it's like, oh, and his son is the rapper Nas.
Yeah.
So a guy with kind of, you know, all these musical surprises. Is there a musical side of you that we don't know about?
No surprises. Nothing I see, you know. Maybe down the line, like you said, he's this cornet playing jazz musician at first, and then he evolves into, he goes back into his roots. He's from Mississippi, Natchez,
right.
Mississippi, so naturally those roots came out. And so my roots are just New York, so I don't know what's going to happen, you know?
Yeah. So, I mean, you started with your roots. I mean, Illmatic is kind of
it.
You were talking before how you almost saw it as kind of a play. It's
yeah.
Like this is what life was like in Queensbridge.
Yeah.
What is it about Queensbridge that has made it? I mean, it's this, for folks who don't know, it's this housing project. It's officially in Long Island City.
Long Island City, yeah.
And, I mean, per capita, I think more hip-hop has come out of Queensbridge than anywhere else.
It's really crazy. As a kid, when you were listening to my pops here and there and other jazz or whatever, I was listening to hip-hop, but there was DJ Molly Mall and MC Shan and Roxanne Shante and all these groups were coming out of my hood, and I was like, this is crazy. They really made a name for themselves and were proud to be where, you know, where we were from. So when it was my turn at the bat, you know, I was kind of taking on their taking the torch from them.
So there was already a tradition.
There was a tradition there.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then after you, the guys from Mobb Deep.
Mobb Deep, Capone and Noriega, as a couple of people.
When you were making Illmatic, you know, were you aware of making some kind of statement about East Coast, you know, the sound of New York City rap, or were you just doing what came naturally?
It was what came natural, and what came natural was representing New York City to the fullest. But it wasn't like I was like it wasn't like I was out there purposely, like intentionally, like that was the focus, was to represent New York only. It was just to represent MCing hip hop music, and it just so happened I'm from New York, so.
Right.
With that being said, New York had to be represented to the fullest.
We're speaking with Nas, the rapper and songwriter, about his now 20-year-old album Illmatic being re-released. At the beginning of New York State of Mind, famously, we actually kind of hear you wondering, how am I going to get into this?
Yeah.
I mean, is that really, was that so improvisational in the making?
Yeah, it was, you know, I knew it would be the beginning of the album. For some reason, I knew that song would be the first song on the album. So it's like, here it is, for all the people that was waiting, you know, here's the record, it's starting. And I'm like, okay, they're listening. I got their attention. You know, I did some previous stuff, and now people were expecting the album. So here it is, and I'm like, at the beginning of the record, I think I say, I don't know how to start this shit, man. Alright. You know, and then I go in.
I don't know how to start this shit.
Rappers are monkey flipping with the funky rhythm. I be kicking, musician, inflicting composition of pain. I'm like Scarface, sniffing cocaine, holding an M16. See, with the pen, I'm extreme. Now, bullet holes left in my peepholes. I'm suited up with street clothes. Hand me a 9 and out, defeat foes. Y'all know my steelo, with or without the airplay. I keep some E and J, sitting bent up in the stairway. Or either on a corner, betting grants with the CeeLo champs. Laughing at bass heads, trying to sell some broken amps. G-packs get off quick, forever niggas talk. Reminiscing about the last time the task force flipped. Niggas be running through the block shooting. Time to start the revolution. Catch a body head for Houston once they caught us off guard. The MAC-10 was in the grass and I ran like a cheetah with thoughts of an assassin. Picked the Mac up, told brothers back up. The Mac spit, lead was hitting niggas, one ran. I made a back.
A little bit of the song New York State of Mind by my guest Nas from the rapper and songwriter's debut album, Illmatic. It was your full-length debut. You'd done some stuff before, as you mentioned before.
Yeah, I've done small parts on two different records, or other people's records. I was featured on two mm-hmm. different songs, Main Sauce and then MC Search. And then this was the album. Yeah.
Illmatic from 1994. Now it's Illmatic 20, which has been remastered. There are some additional remixes and outtakes, etc. Let's hear a little bit of this song called The World Is Yours. When you're listening back to the remastered version of this now, are you hearing things you didn't hear the first time around? Is it audibly different to you?
Usually I can hear a lot of mistakes, a lot of things I would have done differently, but I wouldn't change a thing with this.
I'm the young city bandit, hold myself down single-handed. For murder raps, I kick my thoughts alone, get remanded. Born alone, die alone, no crew to keep my crown a throne. I'm deep, I sound alone, cave inside 1,000 miles from home. I need a new nigga for this black cloud to follow. Cause while it's over me, it's too dark to see tomorrow. Trying to maintain, I flip, feel the clip to the tip. Picturing my peeps, not eating, can make my heartbeat skip. And I'm amped up, they like to champ up. Even my brain's in handcuffs, headed for Indiana. Stabbing women like the Phantom, the crew is lapping Big Willie style. Check the chip to smell. Plus smile. I profile well. Stash through the fly clothes, burning dollars. Delight my soul, walk the blocks with a bop. Checking dames plus the games people play. Bust the problems of the world today.
It's yours.
The world is yours. From the album Illmatic by my guest Nas, joining us here in the Soundcheck studio. Are you sick of explaining the word Illmatic?
No, not at all.
Explain the word illmatic.
well, ill means sick. Yo, that car is ill. That you know, this, so illmatic is just like the epitome. It's like the top of sick, of ill. So it's just like saying, yo, man, this interview is illmatic. you know, that ring she had on is illmatic. You know, so it just encompasses so much.
And again, you mentioned this before, that it was kind of reflective of life in Queensbridge, in the housing projects, in the early 1990s.
Yes, sir.
Are you aware of these court cases where people are being tried for murder on the basis of their rap lyrics, where lyrics are being used as evidence in court?
Yeah, I heard about that.
What do you make of that?
Well, I think if you're going to kill somebody and then rap about it,
putting aside the stupidity factor that if you're going to kill somebody and then rap about it, you deserve what you get. But the idea that in some of these cases, the rap lyrics are practically the only evidence?
That's sketchy. I mean, I can't see how that can hold up. Like, how does rap lyrics really hold up as real evidence in a courtroom? When most of the time people are rapping, it's just a braggadocious thing. It's like not even real. Like, there's not, it's not real. They're just rapping about an attitude and a crazy murderous lifestyle that is more of a fantasy. It's not real. So you can't really take a fantasy and apply it and put it in a courtroom and put someone in jail because they had a moment in a studio.
Right. NPR on All Things Considered the other night was doing a story about this where actually the prosecutors were taking the idea of keeping it real. You know, well, here are these lyrics, and we all know it's all about keeping it real. Therefore, the lyrics must be real.
Well, they need like interpreters. They need like translators. They need someone in there that can really explain to them, you know, the difference between entertainment and reality.
Yeah. We're speaking with Nas here in the Soundcheck studio. He's released 9 solo albums. 6 of them have been number one records. His 1994 debut, Illmatic, is being reissued. Is it weird to be asked to think about your influence? You know, your kind of status as at the ripe old age of 40 as an elder statesman?
Well, the people who come before me, you know, as somebody in music, I think about my musical influences are Marvin Gaye, Michael Jackson, Madonna, Eric B., Slick Rick, Run DMC. They vary. And, you know, the people around me influence me. Other musicians, current musicians, contemporary stuff.
Like who?
Drake, Jay-Z, Outkast reuniting this year.
Yeah,
that's really exciting. That kind of thing makes me think about, you know, what's the next step for me? Those kind of guys.
Yeah. So what is the next step for you?
Well, I don't know, man. I really don't know. Taking it day by day.
All right. We've been speaking with Nas, the rapper, songwriter, and actor, and it's been great fun having you with us here in the Soundcheck studio.
Thanks, John. It's been real.
Looking back is done. Plus, congratulations. You know you got a son. I heard he looks like you. Why don't your lady write you? Told her she should visit. That's when she got hyper. Flipping. Talking about he acts.
The reissued version of Nas's record called Illmatic 20 is out now, and the documentary called Time is Illmatic is set to come out in October. Tomorrow on the show, the story of the theremin, early electronic instrument, told in a thrilling new novel called Us Conductors. Plus, Alive Inside, the documentary about the connection between music therapy and dementia. And we'll have a live performance from the Scottish indie pop band Camera Obscura. That does it for the show today. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck.